Welcome back to the Unschool Files podcast. I'm your host, Megan, and you are listening to Season 2, Episode 7. I am sharing a recording of a discussion I had with a teen named Everest and an adult facilitator named Susan, who are a part of the Seattle Flying Squad. In this season, I've been exploring different spaces and places, both online and in person, that are within the self-directed education movement, who are meeting the unique needs of the communities that they serve. So this particular episode is dedicated to Flying Squads. Flying Squads is a program that was specifically designed to encourage young people to be able to take up space in their city and to be accepted in society as autonomous individuals in our communal spaces of the cities we share. This project has grown. Its founder, Alex Coast, who I interviewed earlier in the season, has expanded this program all the way to Romania, but we've got flying squads in the United States, Canada, Mexico, the UK. It's really, really cool. So join me in this chat that I had with Everest and Susan as we learn about how flying squads help youth rights take flight. Welcome to the Unschool Files podcast. Everest and Susan, I am so glad to have you both here. Why don't we get started with you both just taking a couple minutes to share with listeners a little bit about yourselves and your connection to self-directed education.
I guess I can start. So I've been interested in self-directed education since the dawn of time, since I was a little kid and my parents had John Holt books in the house and things like that. Or I was just that kind of weird kid that thought about that kind of stuff. And although I went to conventional school the whole way through. And then later on, my kids went to the Clearwater School, which is a Sudbury school near here in Seattle. And after that, my older one graduated, my younger one unschooled for a while. And then when the pandemic hit, that's when, just through finding different online things, trying to look for something different that was happening at that time, I found flying squads.
I've been homeschooled for most of my life, which I guess is probably like, and we were in like a lot of homeschooling communities. So we did like, connect with these other homeschoolers. And I didn't find Flying Squad. My dad found Flying Squad and was like, hey, do you want to join these guys? And I was like, yeah, I guess. And it was a great choice. I feel like through getting in touch with this like group of people, I've sort of been able to learn a lot more about like homeschooling and unschooling and self-directed education as a concept and why I think it's like a really good thing. And I don't know what else to say.
Everest, before your father found flying squads, were you conventionally schooling at home or were you unschooling at home?
We tried a couple different things through time. There were times when I was working in like workbooks and doing these like curriculum activities, but I'm pretty grateful that I was homeschooled in that it was never as strict and it never put the pressures on me that traditional schooling does, which I feel very lucky about. And we, I don't know exactly what, like, I feel weird about describing it as unschooling because it wasn't exactly that. And I think like there was some more structured elements to it sometimes.
Okay. So. And how old are you?
I am 15 years old.
Okay. Okay, so my next question is, because just in case anyone is completely new to this concept, What is a flying squad? Do one of you want to, or maybe you could tag team the answer of describing what a flying squad is to folks who are listening who have maybe never heard of this concept?
Do you want to start, Everest?
I'm trying to think of how to explain it exactly.
It's pretty hard to explain.
what it is we as groups of teens, basically, we go to these like public places with an adult facilitator, and I guess the idea is like, Susan, help.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to remember, like, huh, what do I tell people about this? What does it say on the website? I guess there's only two things that a flying squad has to be, and it has to center youth rights kind of in an SDE, self-directed education kind of way, and also be out in a public space. So what makes it a flying squad is it doesn't take place in a center or in a home, which you can, then you're just a group of unschoolers if that's what you want to do. I mean, it's not that we can never, there's really no like strict never or always in flying squad, but basically it's about being out in the community. That way you don't need everything that comes with like having that space. It can just absorb a lot of energy. It's small, usually, like the biggest ones are about 12, 13 or so people. Like for we just met today, like ours today had around 6 people, and which is just perfect. And so it's basically just about being a little community that can wander around out in the community and non-hierarchical, even though I'm the adult facilitator. The facilitator really just means I keep it going. I let people know that it's happening so that people know when to show up, but really anyone can step in and do anything for it that they want to do, no matter what their age. So.
What age does Flying Squad start?
Ours, well, right now we have, our youngest is 11, and then our oldest two are 18. So that's usually what I tell people is like, this is the age of the people that are currently there, but it's not limited to those ages. It's anyone that feels comfortable with that age.
Okay. Okay, so it's not just exclusive for teenagers. It's all ages.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say that. If it's you know, it's mostly for teens, but it's just, you know, like whenever you can't really say like it's for 12 to 18 year olds, because there's always going to be someone like slightly outside of that that would be a great fit too. So it's really hard to know exactly where to put the.
So without arbitrary age limits, it's, you know, directed at maybe more perhaps. Well, I don't know. Is confidence a prerequisite to wandering with other teens out? And I feel like maybe not, because you might be cultivating that confidence out in Flying Squad. So what would you say might be the indicator that a young person is ready to experience that kind of community?
I think it's mainly it's kind of wanting to do it and wanting to be with that group. Like, I can't imagine many 7-year-olds that would be like, yeah, I want to be with the teenagers. It could be kind of intimidating. So,
yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
So you mentioned youth rights. Why don't we maybe talk to listeners about what you mean by youth rights?
Well, I guess that's kind of, even though, I mean, Flying Squad, it's not really set up to be like in opposition to school. I mean, we even have on our Monday night, it's 4 to 7. So people, we do have people that are in public school that also come to Flying Squad, but really it's a place where like human rights are respected regardless of age. So like in a school, there's all these rules that are coming top down, and you got to raise your hand if you want to go to the bathroom, like that, all those kinds of things. So it's kind of, this is just a direct experience of existing without all of that.
Everest, do you have anything you want to add about youth rights?
I mean, I would agree with a lot of what Susan has said about this. I think that youth rights as a concept is something that's really fascinating to me. I think about how like these systems and ways of thinking that can feel and be really difficult for youth to work through, how they affect my life and the lives of like people around me. And I'm saying a lot of like I think things right now, which is not very specific, but I guess what I'm saying is like there's a lot that you could talk about in that vein, but I think in terms of what Flying Squad does, Susan explored it pretty summarized it pretty well.
So maybe for the purposes of listenership, maybe let's break down what kinds of youth rights we are empowering, and how, like maybe like the mechanisms that Flying Squad uses to do that, like specifically how you get together, how you decide where to go, what you might typically do, how you may have discourse over someone in the squad being resistant to a particular direction, those sorts of things, and how that ties into maintaining youth rights, and then also like taking up space publicly around probably so many adults who are probably rolling their eyes and side-eyeing and very curious about why you're out and about. Maybe that might help us explore youth rights a bit more, perhaps in the gaze of the community to the Flying Squad. So let's say it's a Flying Squad meetup day. Do you have a typical spot that you meet up at every time you gather?
We don't have a regular meeting spot right now. What we do is we discuss where to go beforehand online through messaging chat on Discord. So we agree on where to go beforehand. People make suggestions and, you know, we talk about it and decide where to go.
So do you ever experience anyone not wanting to do the thing that everybody else is agreeing on?
I mean, it's pretty rare. It's a pretty agreeable group for the most part, that I think more it can be the opposite way, that everyone's a bit like, I don't care, I'll just do whatever anyone else wants to do. And then it's like, well, we need to come up with something, you know? Yeah. So,
okay. So maybe walk me through what you might typically do, and then maybe we can circle back around to how that engages with youth rights in terms of like how the community encounters you and maybe treats you. So you set off for the day, and does everybody have to have money? Are you typically purchasing things? Is it just to sort of roam and wonder? Is there a goal that you decide on at the beginning of the day?
It's one of those, I mean, it's just like so many things in SDE, like if it's happening at a center or at Flying Squad, like It's so like, it's so hard to answer these things. Like, you want to give people a picture of how it is, but every single time it's so different. And usually it doesn't end up even exactly how we thought it was going to be when we were planning it. But really, it's kind of like all of the above. Like, sometimes we have a location, we meet, and we have no idea what we're going to do that day. Other times there is something of an idea what we might want to do. Like, a couple of times ago, we've done this quite a bit. We meet kind of near a subway station or Link Light Rail, as it's called in Seattle, and then go have a destination in mind that we're going to go to. And usually we know where we're going to go. And so we wanted to go downtown. We wanted to go to a particular bookstore. So that was something. And we were dressed as pirates doing that, because a pirate day was that week. So that week we had more ideas. This time we really didn't. We just met. This was today. We just met, and then we had some idea what kinds of things were nearby, but we didn't have a specific one we wanted to do, and we just ended up going to a little park, and just different games came up that we just kind of made up on the spot. We eventually went and got some frozen yogurt. And yes, it is often we go to a place where there is going to be some stuff to buy, so bringing money can be good, but like, not everyone brings money every time, or we don't always go to a place where you can spend money. I kept, there are other questions in there.
I realize it was kind of loaded questions there, because I'm trying to give the listener an idea of, because I already understand how a flying squad works, so it's really difficult for me to ask questions that are outside of what I already know. But I'm trying to think about, you know, people who are listening who are unfamiliar with this concept. Mm-hmm. I know it probably sounds radical to people. Are there any maybe anecdotes or stories that either of you might have about how the community encounters you all? Do you adjust behaviors or to like meet the adult gaze, or are we really actively pushing back against that? Like, maybe your chapter specifically is very wants to take up a lot of space and push back against the idea that we should kind of have young people in schools, and maybe another chapter doesn't. I'm just trying to get a feel for how Seattle Flying Squads shows up and kind of moves throughout the city publicly.
I mean, I don't think we've met with too much like negativity. I know that is part of the idea of Flying Squads originally, like the original Brooklyn one, like we're going to take up space and like be youth in public, and I think that happens.
And I think we do. We do get like people, you know, asking questions and seeing that we're doing something that's a little unusual, and like noticing that we're here, which means that we are doing something that maybe challenges what they think should be going on, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they, like, a lot of times they just don't know what to think. I mean, people in Seattle are known for being, like, pretty polite. And so, but I think we do kind of confuse people in this, like, what is this? It's school hours. There's teenagers walking around, you know.
Somebody asked me if I was going to graduation once. And I wasn't dressed at all like I was going to graduation, so I have no idea what they were thinking.
It's people try to fit this into their school idea. Like, there was a period of time at Seattle Flying Squad where people were wearing maid outfits. We had certain days where it was like, okay, everyone wear your maid or butler outfit. So that was a thing for a while. And we passed by a group of school kids, and they're like, what, you know, you're dressed like maids. And someone was like, oh, it's our Japanese culture studies. And they were like, oh, like, then it made sense to them. And these were other high school students or middle school students too. It's kind of like, okay, Well, that makes sense. So that's kind of like the graduation thing. People are trying to like fit it into something they understand, because, you know, I mean, you can see, you can see groups of kids walking from public school when they have time to go to a store or something like that, but they look very different. This group, you know, everyone looks different. You know, we're not walking in a straight line. It just, you know, it definitely looks unusual.
You can usually tell when a group of self-directed young people are together.
True.
Everyone's so eclectic and their own, usually, in those spaces, from my experience anyway.
Yeah. That's so true. Yeah, I never have trouble, like, meeting people. Like, if it's a Seattle homeschooler field trip or something, seeing a performance, there's all the school groups with getting out of the school buses. And I'm like, oh, there's our group, even if I've never met any of the people before, because it's just obvious.
That's actually what I was thinking when you were saying when people out in public try to fit it into some place, almost always the first go-to is like, oh, they must be on a field trip. Like, they must be a small group on a field trip. And I wonder if that is, if the opportunity ever presents itself, like conversationally, out in public, to actually share what you're actually doing. Has anyone ever actually asked and you've had the ability to describe what you're doing versus just being a presence in public?
Yeah, that's definitely happened. There was one time where we set up a stand and sold some cookie dough and some zines that one person had made and some lemonades. And that was quite a chance that a lot of people asked about what we were doing, like who we were. Some people were like, are you in a play or whatever? So we explained it flying squads then. Or sometimes people ask and we try to explain.
Today at the mall, they asked if we were part of like a theater group, didn't they?
Some they people did.
And were like, hey guys, are you part of this like theater group? And we were like, no. And then they just walked away.
That's actually something we've gotten a few times, like, oh, is this some kind of a play or a performance? I guess that's kind of how we look. And we weren't even wearing our pirate outfits or anything today, or just a regular, just what we always wear.
Everest, how do you specifically encounter adults in public?
What do you mean by that? Like
what is your typical experience around adults during the daytime, during school hours? Do you find them to be, like, how would you describe your experiences when you encounter adults during school hours out in public?
I mean, I, as a person, am kind of a little bit, like, shy and, like, kind of, I don't like to draw attention to myself. Mm-hmm. So when people, you know, ask me questions, I just like, I feel like I just sort of answer the question and then I don't answer it like interestingly enough for them to like keep asking, so they just leave. I don't know, like, with adults in particular, I think it's like, it can feel a little intimidating sometimes to have them like come up and be like, hey, you're doing something over here. But at the same time, I know that that's like sort of, I don't know.
Yeah. Sounds like it's a peculiar experience.
Yeah. I mean, I guess when adults come up with questions at Flying Squad, a lot of times it will end up being me, which is something I notice. Like, usually if I'm walking around and strangers come up and want to ask me stuff, I'm not that excited to like take the time and talk to someone I don't know. But it's interesting that's different at Flying Squad, because we don't really have an agenda. We're just hanging out in public. And so I will talk to people that come up and want to know what we're doing. And yeah. But usually they don't stay that long because, you know, they get enough of
their own things yeah. to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Perhaps I am imagining far more curiosity from the public than actually exists. Like maybe people aren't all that concerned with people doing their own thing. Or maybe in certain cities, there is more pushback around teenagers being in public, and maybe in other cities, not.
I'm sure a lot of it depends on where you are and all of that.
Yeah.
I get the feeling that's the case, that in New York, they seem to have gotten more negativity. Whereas in Seattle, I don't know if there's more homeschoolers or what it is, but it doesn't seem as, or people just keep to themselves more and don't question something odd that's going on. I don't know what, but we don't run into too much negativity. So,
Everest, while you were speaking, something I was thinking is in the realm of youth rights is a young person's right to silence and to not have to respond to people's queries and curiosities. Do you have anything that you would like to say about that, about like maybe being uncomfortable and not wanting to have to answer people's questions, and maybe adults learning to cultivate a skill around that?
That's a really interesting thought. I don't think I've thought too much about that specifically before, but that's a really interesting perspective on that.
As you were describing the discomfort, I just thought, I was kind of imagining myself in that situation. Like I'm standing at a counter grabbing my coffee and I see, you know, a young person and I happen to ask like, you know, is your group with, you know, you said they ask theater all the time. So maybe I just say, are you all a theater group or something? And you don't want to respond. I was kind of like putting that scenario in my head and thinking, for me, I would 100% respect like the visual cues that I would observe to know that maybe you don't want to answer and like leave you alone. but I wonder if maybe some adults don't pick up on that cue or feel entitled maybe to a response because they're an adult.
Maybe they do, but maybe that is the reason why people seem to like leave when they get like the no to their original like question, like, are you in a theater group? No. And then they leave.
They read the room. They're like, yeah.
I don't know. That's something to think about for sure.
You spoke a little bit before about how you think a lot about how systems affect us all. And I wonder if there's anything you wanted to expand on those thoughts or just kind of give you the space to say what you want about those thoughts and how systems affect us.
I think about it a lot with like school as like how it affects our opinions of things, and even like adults, because adults were teenagers once, you know, and they have also like been in school, and some of the like and being in that system and dealing with all of that has taught them certain things about how teenagers should be and about how life should be that then like I think really influence how they view like children and teens when they're adults now. And I think it's kind of odd how often people seem to forget that like the people who are teenagers now are gonna be just like are gonna act like people too, you know, just like how you did when you were a teenager.
Yeah.
I think that's something that I'm really like curious about, that and how that mindset comes to be.
Do you think adults forget? Like it's just something they forget?
I don't know, but sometimes they seem to act like they don't, like they somehow don't know what it's like to be a teenager.
What do you think is the biggest difference between a teenager's experience and these adults that you're speaking of? Like, what are they, what do they not get? What do they not remember?
I think there's a lot about like something that I think a lot about with the experience of young people is like autonomy and control and like freedom over what you're doing and when. And some of it's like hard to say that it's anyone's fault exactly, but like, if I want to go somewhere, somebody has to take me, or I have to be able to walk there. But most of the time you can't walk places. So somebody needs to take me. And if somebody's not going to take me, I'm out of luck. And I don't know where I'm going with this. I feel like I'm just throwing out a lot of ideas, but I don't know where any of it goes.
No, I think I'm following, almost like maybe adults forget that your entire freedom and ability to move freely hinges on their willingness or capacity to be the vehicle or the means, whether it costs money or a ride or, you know, getting into a specific program as a prerequisite for this other thing you want to do, that they hold the keys to the gate.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. And I think also there's a lot of like, there's something more I want to say, but I don't have the words for it just yet.
Maybe if we talk a bit more, it'll come to you.
Maybe.
Yeah. So it seems like maybe you're not bumping into a lot of this during flying squads, but you're talking about general adultism that exists.
I am.
Yeah. Okay. Which is totally okay. I think we should be able to hold both conversations, both one about how flying squads exists and what it is and how you all use it as a way to gather, but also these other concepts that, I mean, the reason flying squads exist is because these concepts of adultism exist, these ideas of schoolishness and adults being sort of like trained to believe that like there's some amount of knowledge that you gain over a period of time, and then like once you've reached peak adulthood, you now like somehow know all the things, and you forgot that you were once a developing person who maybe didn't know the things or didn't have certain experiences to make all the things fall into place or like have the context for certain concepts to make sense. And adults forget that so much so that they lack the compassion in young people, lack the ability to extend compassion to young people, and oftentimes are short, expect a lot. I mean, I can say things that I know lots of parents say, like, you know, you're too old for that. You should know better. You should know this by now. This is something, you know, lots of adults say lots of things that I think they think that because a teenager's physical body has like grown exponentially and may even look and like an adult, that they're not an adult yet. And still have their own experiences to be had, but don't need to be treated like an infant.
Yeah.
like you can hold the space for you to have your experiences and your growth without infantilizing youth. Yes, I think that's what I was trying to say.
Yes.
Because, I mean, yeah, we all, yeah. Oh, go ahead.
No, I don't have anything more to say. I'm agreeing.
Okay. All. Yeah, I am too. That just made me think. Like, that, I mean, we all grow and learn throughout life. And it's not really any different. I mean, that's kind of my experience. Like, I do remember that as a kid and teen, just feeling like, why, kind of like Everest was saying, like, why do adults forget, you know? And I really didn't want to forget. And then I felt like I was no different from adults. And now, after being an adult, I'm kind of like, I don't feel like I know that much. I feel like, you know, I know some different things from teens, but not necessarily more, because there's a lot that they know. And that's kind of the appeal to me of being around kids and teens. And even long ago, even when I was a preschool teacher, you know, I loved getting that perspective of the very small kids. So that's kind of the idea to bring it back to Flying Squads. That's kind of the idea, is like within what we're doing at Flying Squads and how we relate to each other, we're trying to have that experience there where everyone can be equal regardless of age. I'm really the only person that's a different age dramatically from everybody else. But still, it just feels different than the way adults and teenagers are really allowed or encouraged to relate to each other any other time. In my experience, like, there's just something about any gathering of people that I'm just kind of sucked along into this, like, being with the adults and being a certain way, and then the teenagers are over there being teenagers, and it's just kind of not really encouraged that everyone can just be people. When really the teen years are just, it's just kind of a made up thing. We didn't even really have teenagers until, I don't know when the concept was invented, but like 100 years ago or something. Before that, you just kind of went directly from childhood to adulthood. So it's this very specific age group that now we have all these ideas about that aren't really intrinsic to how humans are. It's just ideas we have that then kind of get perpetuated.
What would you say are some of those ideas or stereotypes that most adults fall into the trap of believing about teenagers?
Oh, well, there's this whole, like, their brains are not, now it's 25. It's kind of like the brain is not fully developed until age 25. I get really tired of hearing that one, because again, your brain changes throughout life, but it feels like, oh, well, you know, that age group is impulsive. They can't make long-term decisions. You know, they really need that guidance of older people
And there's some truth to the idea that we're going through a lot of change right now, but also there's a lot of truth to the fact that you go through a lot of change, like, throughout the entirety of your life, and there's lots of different stages where you might go through a lot of change, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you don't have, like, valuable insights, because you're changing a lot and you're gonna have, like, some, like, and maybe in the future something really good will happen to you that will change how you think for the better. Maybe that will happen, but that doesn't mean that you didn't have, like, a lot of capacity to understand and learn and say valuable things before that happened, right?
Yeah, it doesn't mean that your thoughts, your questions, the things that you are pondering, that doesn't make those any less valid or any less of a, like, less of anything. Like, I think those thoughts and ideas and curiosities are all they're fully formed at the state that they're at and worth exploring, talking about, being heard if they want to be heard, published if they want to be published. I'm thinking, like, very meta in this way, but Like I do, I think I'm hearing what you're saying. Like these, it's almost like they're dismissed as like foolish young ideas that aren't fully formed.
Yeah. And I think people underestimate what young people can understand and know a lot. Like I've had experiences where I know something and I know what I'm doing, but an adult stops me because they think I don't know what I'm doing. They think they know better than me. And they don't let me explain because they think that I don't know.
Do you have a specific instance you would want to share?
I actually do have. This is a story I told a lot about a time. I know it will be. I do know.
Yeah, that's a great story. Yeah.
I got a nettle sting while I was out at a park with my brother. And I have known like pretty much like all my life what plants are good for that, and I knew that there was one right next to me. So I started to stand up to go over to get it, but there's this adult man over on the sidewalk who sees that I like fell over and that I'm trying to stand up, and he's like, no, don't do that, you'll hurt yourself. And I was like, it's a nettle sting, I can stand up. And he's like, no, you'll hurt yourself. He's just not listening to me. So I ended up like crawling over to the plant that I needed, and I pick it, and immediately he goes, don't eat that. And I was like, I'm not gonna eat it. It's gonna help with my nettle sting. And he's like, don't eat that. And he just wouldn't let me explain. So eventually I ended up just like standing up and walking home and treating the sting there instead, because like he kept offering to come over and help me, and I was like, I would really like you to stay over there. I can handle this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting story, and so very persistent of them.
Yeah, very much so.
So when you were talking about systems before, and you mentioned how school kind of has made adults the way that they are, I'm curious if you have any opinions, Everest, on whether, like, what your opinions are on school. Like, is school totally dead, or should school still be an option for youth?
I think that school as, like, a place where people can gather and learn things, and, like, people who know things can teach things to other people, definitely has a lot of value as a concept. I actually am currently going to a school. It's a parent partnership, so it's like part-time school. And I'm not all the way in on everything about how that works, but I think there's some value in having, you know, places available to learn these things that kind of, like, there's a lot of things that you can learn just by living, but there's a lot of things that you sort of need to make a more specific effort to learn, especially depending on like what you naturally gravitate towards. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of the trouble with school as it is comes down to trying to press everyone into a mold on, you know, how to learn, and trying to control people, I think.
Yeah. My follow-up question to that was going to be for the both of you, because I do think the conversation around school or no school is much more nuanced. And I love that. I love that Flying Squads offer something that can be done after hours, that isn't exclusive to people who are homeschooling or unschooling. And I think that that speaks to the variety of ways that different programs can exist to create avenues and paths for people to obtain information and practice skills, learn from other people, you know, build on other people's ideas to collaborate in things. So I was wondering, based on that and kind of in that vein, what if you could dream up a dream school, what would that look like?
Ooh.
Or maybe we don't call it a school. I mean, but for all intent and purposes, it's a school. It's a resource center. It's a hub. It's, you know.
It's a place you go that isn't your home or right. It's not out in public. And where, you know, where the idea is learning, or it doesn't have to be. But I mean, to me, there's really just one thing that would fix it all in my mind. And that's just make it non-compulsory. Like, other than that, I mean, I don't think there's any one way of doing a school. I mean, I can like come up with different things like this would be really cool. You know, this is what would work for people I know or whatever, or this would be really interesting. But I think there can be a lot of different ways of doing it, but it's just really the fact that it's compulsory. And for families that are new to homeschooling, they always have a lot of questions and fear, like, well, what if, like, and I guess that comes from the schoolishness growing up, like, well, what if I forget to send in my declaration of intent by the right day? What's going to happen? And so it's really intimidating because of this compulsory nature of it, and that it just makes it hard for people. A lot of people aren't even aware that you don't have to go to school. And
homeschooling isn't possible for everyone, right? Some people, yeah. Like some parents might need to send their kids to school because they need to be working. Like both of them need to be working during these hours to, like, there's a lot of reasons why, like, they might not be able to homeschool their children.
100%. Yeah. There have to be a variety of options, I think. And I think that maybe having different alternative models and programs all over is a more dynamic approach than, like, you could reform school by doing this thing and then applying it nationwide or worldwide. I just don't see those sorts of fixes happening. And I think there's, you know, that runs parallel to a debate around how to fund those kinds of spaces, which I think could lead us into a whole other hour of a podcast. probably shouldn't go there. But yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult to fund these spaces, which I think is a cool thing that Flying Squads is able to circumvent without having to pay for a space to gather in.
That is an amazing thing. Like with Flying Squad, I think the value is so great. Like I learned so much, like, for example, I know so much more after 3 years in Flying Squad about what plants I can eat or not eat, because Everest knows a lot. and like all people bring in whatever they might be learning in whatever spaces they're in at other times. And we all learn from that just because there isn't a thing in advance. Like we will learn about plants you can eat because we spend a lot of time outside near those plants, but it just happens. So I think a space like Flying Squad that is so simple, and we don't have our own building and we don't have a plan, but there is just a lot of learning that happens when just a group of people spend time together. And also the other thing is, I think beyond like, what should we do with school? Besides making it non-compulsory, supporting people in other ways, I think is really important, because there is this whole idea that like our society just revolves around school so much. I think that if we really thought about, well, how are we going to support families? If we just assume that not everyone is going to go to school, but we try just as much to support what parents really need and want, rather than like, well, you know, school. I just think that there's just a lot of ways to meet people's needs that don't have to be so complicated and don't have to all come from that one place.
Right. Say more about those parents.
Oh, about supporting parents?
Yeah. What kinds of needs do you think parents would benefit from getting support in to be able to make more choices, more choices around how to empower their youth in their own education.
Well, I mean, actually, what I was thinking when I said that is, like, that's always like, well, we have to have school because parents need to work. And yes, I mean, that for individual families, that's true. So often, like, it's really hard to figure out a way to homeschool for a lot of people. And when I think about it, it's like school doesn't even really help with that much. The hours of school don't really match up with work hours that well. And there's all these vacation days, and then there's all this, like, extra stuff you have to think about. So I'm not sure that school really helps with parents needing to work, but it just is kind of the thing that's there. So that is kind of like what draws me to Flying Squad. It's kind of eliminates anything that's not necessary and just goes to, like, well, what do we really need? It's not about supporting parents going to work, but it's about what do we really need as people? It's just gathering some people. So starting with that, so if we start with, like, well, the problem is we need, you know, people need to earn a living. Like, if we could do something with that, then maybe we wouldn't need school, you know? So it just, to me, it's more, to me, I guess a lot of problems can be solved by removing what you don't need rather than just adding, like, well, rather than looking at it as like, well, what can we add? It's sort of like, well, what do we not need and what could we not do? And
Everest, did you want to say something?
No, I'm like, I feel like there's a lot of things I could say about what Susan just said, but it would probably lead us into, like, a whole nother long discussion. I don't want to, like, go on that tangent right now, so I'm not going to.
Okay. I respect that. I know that sometimes when I get on a specific topic, I will just go on and on and on to the point where I'm like, I get disoriented and I'm like, wait, where did I start? So a couple more questions around, before we wrap up around Flying Squads is, how do you communicate with parents? What all do you tell parents? Is there any sort of, like, reporting that is involved where you, like, share what you've experienced in either a weekly or a daily type roundup of information? Or what's the relationship like with the parents?
Well, it's really nice because the other parents are all part of the Seattle homeschool community, as am I. So we're kind of all in the same boat that way. And many of those parents also teach classes, like, of something that they're particularly interested in, or they can organize things. So it doesn't create this thing where, which can happen sometimes at SDE centers or something, where, like, certain adults are on the inside and then others are out there. The parents are just kind of out there on this different level. I just feel like, well, I run the Flying Squad because that's my interest, but they can do other things at other times. And it just really, and there isn't any kind of formal reporting. I will send an email to the parents about where we're going to be, or, like, if I send an email about kind of what we're expecting to do over the next few months. And then, and I'll just include in the email if there's anything particularly that I want to tell them about, some parents I tend to see or talk with more often for whatever reason, others very rarely. So it's so small that just on a personal level, I can let people know.
But there isn't any particular policy in place around how to engage with parents.
There isn't.
Actually, I would probably should say, it sounds like there's not policies, I'm using big air quotes here, with how Flying Squads operate. Way more of just grassroots organizing, come together and then go apart, versus, like, following a structure or a regimented way of being.
That's right. I mean, that's really the thing about Flying Squads. There's just so few things that are at the core of Flying Squad that have to be happening for it to even be a Flying Squad. But other than that, it's just like in response to the actual people involved, young people, you know, most of all, but parents too. Like, it's just kind of like, okay, well, this is what everyone needs. So this is what's going to be happening.
How do you manage conflict amongst each other out in public?
Well, that's an interesting one. It's funny, like earlier on in Flying Squads, people would ask, well, how do you manage conflict? And I'd be like, well, I don't know. I guess we never really had any conflict. So I'm like, well, I guess we'll just deal with it. We'll figure something out when it comes up. Or I don't know. I would just come up with some answer, but we just didn't really have conflict. But then we did have a big conflict. Because like the smaller
it
ones
wasn't
about
really a conflict out in public. It mostly happened like over text in our online servers. So we didn't really, like, if I'm understanding the question right, it was about things coming up while we're out at a squad, which I'm not sure how to answer.
So if you haven't had anything happen publicly where you've had to like stop and do either like a sharing circle or mediation or something to diffuse conflict, maybe let's revert back to how you've managed conflict, interpersonal conflict, through your communication channels that aren't public, but still part of how you are with each other, because you do come back together eventually.
Okay. Sorry for cutting you off, Susan. You can continue whatever you were about to say.
Was I about to say something?
Were you?
I don't know. Do you want to talk more about conflict, or should I say more about this?
I'm sure the both of us have a lot to say regarding that one specific conflict. It is... I'm the one here. But I'd like you to start.
Okay. I mean, yeah, it is hard because, I mean, as you can, I mean, this is, we had this big conflict. It happened like 6 months ago and it's still not resolved enough. It's just hard to talk about it when there's people that aren't present. There are people that don't come to Flying Squad anymore. So I guess I would not say we were super successful at resolving this in a way that worked for everyone. But in a sense, we did, because deciding, like, you know, certain people deciding, well, they just didn't want to come to Flying Squad anymore and they're going to go off and do other things. That's valid. Like, if that's how they want to handle it, that's fine. But what we did, there was this conflict. It's one of those, it was just this messy thing. And when it happened, everyone had a different opinion. And I was a bit like, wow, like, we're a real SDE thing, because I know, like, that's kind of what happens. You get humans together that are free and all that. Like, you get these conflicts where, like, there just was no even agreeing even on the basics of what even happened or how we should be looking at this. And it was messy. But then I felt like all of the young people did a pretty good job on some honest communication. Like, we didn't, like, at Flying Squad, Flying Squad came to an end and everyone left after, like, clearly there was this problem. So we didn't really get a chance to talk about it at Flying Squad. And then on Discord, people shared, people wrote some stuff in there that I thought was really honest and really, like, showed a lot of self-awareness and it was just helpful to, like, hear the different perspectives. But it didn't really, I mean, it depends what you mean by, like, resolve something. I mean, it's just kind of, I thought about this for so long, like, what should, you know, as the adult, the facilitator, like, what should I have done here? Like, is there something else that would have been more helpful? And I ended up thinking, you know, everyone really has to figure out for themselves, like, how they want to be in conflict. Like, I kind of have some things that work for me, but I have also, like, since then been looking at, like, how do other places do this? Like, at ALCs, they have a
a certain style with conflict. I mean, the Sudbury style is like a bit more, my kids had a pretty good experience with that actually, but it's a bit more than we really need at Flying Squad. And then I end up thinking like, well, really, like, what if you have some kind of a plan or a system on how you're going to deal with conflict? Like, it might work for some of the people, but there's always that point where it falls apart and it's not working, and no one's happy with it, or only some of the people are happy with it, or like, at least, you know. And so I don't think there's a really a conclusion. So I ended up feeling like, well, it's just, this is what, you know, it's more just, we're just all present for this. And like I said, I thought just people came in with some pretty, with some pretty good communication, but it didn't cause everyone to agree, you know?
So, I think if I could like change something about how we handled that, the one thing I would change is I would try to open that communication sooner, because I think if we'd been talking about it before it got to that point, maybe it could have been resolved in a way that wasn't quite so messy. And facilitating an environment where open communication feels safe to do, I mean, easier said than done, but I think that goes a long way for conflict resolution.
Yeah, I would agree. And communication is very challenging when feelings are charged, whether they are charged through, you know, excitement or through just like frustration, whatever the thing may be. The communication is sometimes harder to bring to a calm state when feelings are charged. So I'm thinking a lot about how communities sometimes have this kind of thing happen. I think you all are speaking to how the attempts at community care to hear one another, to listen to what someone's experience might be and try to make adjustments. The point you're speaking of, Susan, around like having to settle with everything that was done could be done, and not everybody was satisfied, and maybe someone's not even in the community anymore, is probably so, so challenging to hold. But it's such a truth that I think is important for people to remember, that every community cannot resolve every conflict and keep everyone in the community all the time. We, as free people, have the ability to decide, even if you walk away with no hard feelings, like, I've done everything I can do in this space and my energy is no longer, like, I'm maxed in this space and I need to move on. And that can be really hard, I think, for us to accept sometimes, especially in smaller niche communities like this, where, like, you don't want to lose your people, right? You don't want to lose your fellow self-directed people.
You don't. And I mean, both because you want to keep the thing going, and also because, I mean, I really care so much about all the people that have been at Flying Squad if they came for a while. And then it's sad. It's just like,
yeah,
it leaves a big hole when certain people aren't there. And there's so many different, I mean, again, and figuring out how to leave something is hard. I mean, sometimes there's people that leave for good reasons, because they're just busy with things that are really important to them, and you just can't do everything. And so then it's sad if people aren't there, but it's also like you're happy for the time you had with them, and it's just kind of time to go do other things. Sometimes I find that people do, sometimes it works the other way around. Like, it's time to leave for whatever reason, and it's really hard to leave a close community. And then so that's when a conflict can really bubble up. And like, sometimes I wonder, like, is it really the thing? Like, I mean, this happens so many times, like the thing that the conflict is about on the surface, is that really so important? Or is it more just like trying to find a way to exit the community, or because it's just time? Or is it about something else entirely? So these things are complicated.
Oh, are you meaning like a self-fulfilling prophecy of like trying to sort of self-destruct as you leave?
Yeah, I've just seen that many times in communities with adults that really,
yeah,
someone that it's just hard to leave something, and it just brings up a lot of emotions, and then those emotions can come out as like anger at stuff that has maybe been simmering. That has been simmering. I mean, Everest is so right that like bringing it up earlier on before it builds up into a big thing is probably for the better. But sometimes these things, like, they simmer and they don't seem important enough. But then when you're leaving, it's kind of like, it just kind of erupts. That's when it erupts into this.
I mean, I've definitely fallen into like having conflicts be bigger than maybe they need to be, because I didn't know how to say, like, I don't want to do this anymore, I'm leaving.
Yeah, I have too. That's good. Yeah, so that's what I'm saying, it, you know.
Yeah, I think I've done that too. Everest, would you say that there is a forum for how to announce how you might be feeling about something, or is there not a forum for doing that other than casually through Discord? Like, maybe you have a channel for complaints or a channel for like awarenesses. How do you all like do that?
You know, I don't know that I don't know.
We don't know. Yeah, that's a great idea. Maybe we need a channel.
Maybe we should have it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it could be great to have. One thing I noticed about working in self-directed spaces and interviewing people from various self-directed spaces is if there is a forum for complaints or awarenesses, because some communities don't want to call it a complaint because that already carries a negative connotation. An awareness can be something as simple as, you know, every time I get here, every time I arrive, I don't like that everyone's back is always turned, and it makes me feel better to know that I can see the faces of the people that are in group. And it may just mean that thing needs to be talked about, right? Like, oh, when I'm approaching Flying Squad on Flying Squad days, like when everyone's back is turned or everyone's huddled, I feel excluded. It may not mean that thing might materially change, but it brings up the awareness of someone having a feeling. So that it could be talked about.
Yeah, that's great. All right, we should do that.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, that just might be a good vehicle for dealing with or talking about things that could be communicated before they reach conflict. But sometimes conflict just happens, and everyone deals with those things in different ways too. So I'm always curious to hear about how communities do that.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just hard to know like how important something is. I feel like with this big conflict that we're talking about, people did try to bring it up. Like, people did bring it up, but it just didn't really go anywhere. But maybe if we had something a bit more, you know, formalized, that we knew like this is important. You know, it's not just like, oh, well, maybe we could, you know, people like subtly trying to get their point across. It maybe just didn't really get there. So
yeah, we all have such different communication styles, right? Some of us, I think, might assume that people can read our body language that we're unhappy or dissatisfied with something, and then some people may, like, it just doesn't register at all that you're uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so my last question about flying squads to wrap up is, what is the cost? Do parents pay a fee for young people to be in Flying Squad? Is everything free? How does that work?
I just ask for a pretty low, like, suggested donation amount, and I don't worry about it. If like people are really occasionally pay more, people pay less, or if someone like doesn't pay, I never even question it. Like, if they just forgot to pay, or if they don't have the money, or whatever the reason is, it's just not worth worrying about it to me. So that's how I do it. It's just kind of like, I tell people a certain amount and they can send it or not. And most people do. But it's, and it's my, the amount is kind of similar to like what some other homeschool classes around Seattle would cost, but it's kind of, it's interesting how flying squads everywhere vary so much. Some of them are free. Some of them cost like so much more than Seattle costs. So it's really up to each individual flying squad.
Yeah, that was going to be my follow-up question, is how do you decide? So I guess it's based on probably whoever's facilitating, whether or not they have the ability and privilege to show up for free and not need to be compensated for a day's worth of work. Mm-hmm. And perhaps just, you know, what kind of community you're serving, which another question around this is, do a lot of flying squads have multiple facilitators, or do they all have only one facilitator?
Most of them have one or two.
Okay. Anything about the way they work or things that you want people to know? Anything to encourage people where to find you in the area who might want to sign up? Do you have a wait list, or do you have free space? What's the situation with Seattle Flying Squad?
There's space, and probably the best way is to look at flyingsquads.org, the website, and just find me on there and email me.
Perfect. And then before we go, circling back around to youth rights, if there's any last notes or musings around youth rights that you would like to share, or for listeners to sit with as we close out?
I guess I was thinking, as we were talking earlier about youth rights, really it's kind of everyone rights. Like, youth rights aren't really different from the rights that we would want everyone to have. So what we do at Flying Squad, it's something so rare for anyone of any age to have, is just kind of that little bit of space with no agenda. It's hard to find that as an adult. And I think it actually is especially hard to find that as a teen, because there's all this expectation about the future. And like, here's, you know, you want to spend like every moment preparing for that future. And this is just this little pocket of time. Like, when do you just spend 3 hours with no purpose, you know? But it ends up, you know, by not having a purpose, it ends up offering a lot. And that's really something that we should all have the right to as humans.
I love that. I love that you want to end on youth rights being human rights.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Everest?
I'm just like, I think I really like how that was said. I think a lot about how like youth rights connect to, and what we want for youth rights connects to like what we might want for things that, you know, everyone should have. I think Susan said it better than me, but I definitely agree with that.
All right. I'm glad what I said made sense. And yeah, absolutely. Like, that's kind of what we're hoping to experience a little of that at Flying Squad, so that we know what we're going for in other areas of our lives and for other people. So,
yeah, maybe we need a comprehensive list of these things that we're speaking about, that we are trying to empower people with. I know there's, you know, there's writings from John Holt and John Taylor Gatto on youth rights. And I'm thinking specifically about the book Escape from Childhood, and how he lists all of the things that children are not allowed to engage in society, like the fact that they aren't able to work, the fact that they're not able to leave their family of origin on their own, the fact that they're, you know, not empowered with the freedom to move throughout the world however they choose. But it's kind of a dated book. So I wonder if maybe we need something a little more updated with some updated language. Maybe we could collaborate on something like that, and it could be some sort of declaration for youth rights being human rights, so people could see the connection clearly.
Yeah,
Yeah. Okay. I know a few other Flying Squad folks. I'm going to see if I can get them to collaborate, and I'm going to drag Alex Coast into it as well.
All right.
I know he's just had a baby, but I'm going to pitch this to him and tell him we need a comprehensive list. Help me. All right. It was so great to speak with you both. I really appreciate you taking the time to join me. It's so late at night, your time.
Yeah. Thank you for inviting us on the podcast. I really enjoyed this conversation. I felt like a lot of really good ideas were brought up.
Thank you so much for listening. Thanks again, Susan and Everest, for spending this time with me. I'm truly honored to have an entire hour's worth of a teenager's time to have a chat. If you are a teenager and want to discuss your self-directed life, please reach out to me. Before you go, please, just a couple of announcements I want you to hang on. These are really, really good. There is a new offering. The Youth Partnership Directory is located on my website at theunschoolfiles.com, and it is an accessible directory of adult mentors of all types for young people to partner with on a range of subjects and ideas. All of the mentors have their calendars up and are available for booking. And we have everything from our suggested accessible price all the way down to pay what you can. And if you're a parent or a caregiver and you've been looking for support, please join us on Discord. It is free of charge. We have some rules you have to agree to in order to make sure that we're kind of holding an intersectional space and keeping the Unschool Files sort of mission in mind to keep that intersectional lens. But we have events and discussions and ongoing conversations and study groups, and we've got offshoots of that for virtual face-to-face connection with our monthly cohorts, and it is such a beautiful community of people. If you have the ability, please head to my Patreon and partner with me. I do not charge for the work that I do, and Patreon is the only way that I can support all of the interfaces and platforms that I use and tools that I use, and I am seeking partnership. Everything can be found at theunschoolfiles.com. If you just head there, you can join me in community, you can find my Patreon, you can find the directory, you can pick up copies of the zines from the past, and see what I'm up to coming up. Until next time, stay kind to each other.